Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 10, delivered on September 28, 2011. The title of this lecture is Measuring Risk.
Today, Measuring Risk. This lecture would better be titled Measuring Risk and Why We Care. But that's a little unprofessional. We always care. We're the care bears, or not. Now, I've given you a worksheet here, which is essentially the setup of it is rather simple for the cash flows that I am, for the sales, real low numbers. But realistically, this is how you would do it to measure various aspects of the overall risk of a firm with respect to its net income and what causes that risk. Now, if you'll see that I've given you the sales figures with a probability distribution, and then I've also given you the CVs and you can quickly check those when we get to that part. Part of what I'm doing here is showing you how to do this fast so that you don't do as many calculations, which means you don't have as much chance for risk, the risk of making a mistake and then blowing everything. If you make a mistake in one of these, it can be downright disastrous. On the exam, you will do a problem like this. It will look very similar to what I am showing you here in terms of what you will have to do as far as getting the different coefficients of variation and all that. Through the grinder, you see that we have a probability distribution symmetric, 2%, 8%, 20%, 40%, 20%, 8%, 2%. And the associated sales projections are 800, 1,000, 1,400, 2,000, 2,600, 3,000, and 3,200. Now talk to me, make your life simple. You know one of those two columns, mu and sigma, you know what it is without even calculating it. What is it? What's mu? 2,000. Why is it 2,000? Symmetric distribution. The mean will sit right there at the center. So you've got one number you don't even have to worry about. The next number you do have to worry about, but you can do it the hard way, or if you make sure that you don't make a mistake, you can do it a little bit faster. Because the sigma for the sales, sigma is going to be the square root. Well, let me write it in fancy for you. Sigma will be the square root of the sum from I equals 1 to n different states of the probability of scenario I times the mean minus up the cash flow in scenario I minus the mean quantity squared. That's a fancy way of writing it. That's the way you write it so that you can impress people. What that's simply saying is that we are going to take the probabilities, respectively, of each of the cash flows, minus 2 grand, quantity squared, plus point, now I gotta watch what I'm doing here. 0.08 times 1,000 minus 2 grand. 0.08 times 1,000 minus 2 grand. Square that plus, and then you go on down the line. 0.20 times 1,400 minus 2,000 quantity squared. Plus 0.40 times, and I'm writing this out the first time. I'm sure as heck not going to do this from here on out. What was that next one? 2,000. Oh, that's right. That was your center. 2,000 less 2,000 quantity squared plus 0.14 times, it should be 2,600, 0.20, I'm sorry, 0.20 times 2,600 less 2,000 quantity squared plus 0.14, oops, 0.14 times, should be 3,000. Why do I keep writing a 0.14? It's a 0.08. Oh, I was doing another problem. 0.08 times 3,000 minus 2,000 quantity squared plus 0.02 times, what have I got there? 3,200 minus 2,000 quantity squared. Now, you're not going to do it that hard, the hard way, unless you really do enjoy punishment. There's a faster way to do it. All you have to do is the first three. That one's going to be zero, and these are just going to be the same as these. Do the first three, and then multiply it by two before you take the square root, for God's sake. If you do that, I want you to do it, because you'll have to do it on an exam. And if you do it here now, it's going to be a lot easier for you to crank through this problem, which constitutes some serious points on the exam. If you can do it now, nice and fast, you will not be in major problems when you get to the exam. 0.02 times 800 less 2,000, and then you square that, plus 0.08 times the quantity 1,000 minus 2,000. Whoops. Watch your parentheses. Times 1,000 minus 2,000. Square that. Plus 0.20 times 1,400 minus 2,000 quantity squared. Get the answer there, times it by 2, and then you take the square root of that answer. If I could remember what the heck I'm doing here. Okay. What do you get for an answer? What do you get? We're getting random. It should be a one value. What do you get for that? Let me make sure I've got this right. Who got 601? Okay. Good. Anyone not get 601? Okay. Okay, so now we've got the first answer written in. We got two answers. Now that CV, actually those CVs might be wrong. Let me make sure those CVs are right. Is it right or is it wrong? Because I was doing another worksheet here. 2,000, okay, 601.33 divided by 2,000. That answer. Okay, answer. Okay. What do you get for your CV on that one? Yeah, I thought those CVs are wrong in there. I was a little concerned about that printed out after I'd done another worksheet. Okay, so you've got your coefficient of variation should come out to be 30.07%. Now, be sure you round it to two decimal places as a percentage. That's important. That's the house rules. Two decimal places. Okay? Now, you proceed on. Now, for this problem, I want you to do variable expenses as 40% of sales. Variable expenses, 40% of sales. And that's the way I'll cast it. That's the way it usually is cast. They're variable, and in this case, let's just go with 40% of sales, and then you write down your variable expenses across the probability distribution. And if you do that, you're going to get each of those 40%. You should get 320 for the first one, 400 for the second one, and then you crank on. 1,400 times 40%, 2,000 minus 40% times 40%, duh, 2,600 times 40% gives you 1,040. 3,000 times 40% should be 1,200, and 3,200 times 40% is 1,280. Now from that, you can get your operating income without fixed costs involved. And if you do that, I mean, it's actually almost as easy to just take 800 times 0.6, but 800 times 0.6 is 480, and then 600, and then 1,400 minus 560 is 840, and then 1,200 for the next one. And then 2,600 times 0.6 is 1,560. And then you should get 1,800. And 3,200 minus 1,280 gives you 1,920. Now, first things first. I want you to crank out, tell me right off the top of your head, what's the mean going to be? What's mu? Yes, because it's still a symmetric distribution. A percentage of a symmetric distribution is still a symmetric distribution. So you know the mean without flogging through that. That'll be 1,200. Now calculate the sigma. Humor me. Calculate the sigma for me. If you calculate the sigma, you should get 0.02 times 480 minus 1,200 squared. Quantity squared, I should say. Plus 0.08 times the quantity 600 minus 1,200 quantity squared, plus 0.2 times 840, the quantity, 840 minus 1,200 squared. Now I'm going to get, for that, 65,088. I'm going to times it by 2, and then I'm going to take the square root of that answer. The square root of that answer is 360.80. It's $360.80. Sigma, by the way, is in dollars, and so is mu. They are both dollars. That's important. Now, what do you get when you take 360.80 divided by 1,200? What do you get? When you take that sigma divided by that mu. In other words, you take 360.80 divided by 1,200. What do you get? Well, spank me. Yeah. It's not going to change. The coefficient of variation will be the same because it was a percentage of the original number that you subtracted. Variable expenses do not change volatility. Variable expenses do not change volatility. So I know for a fact that the coefficient of variation after taking away variable expenses will be the same as the coefficient of variation at the beginning. Now, the last thing to do here is I want you to take the fixed expenses at $300. Make your fixed expenses $300. So all you would do is write a $300 across the row at the fixed expenses row. And then take that away for your EBIT with just fixed expenses. And you would get 180, 300, 540, 900, 1260, 1500, and 1620. Now you're going to see some magic happen. And this, I'm taking you through a painful process, but you're going to see some unbelievable simplifications once you do it. First of all, tell me what the mean of this distribution is, what the mu on that EBIT line is going to be. You don't have to worry about it. It's right. Yeah, that's something you don't have to calculate. It's going to be 900. The sigma you're going to have to calculate. So what I will do now is I will say, okay, I'm going to take the square root of 0.02 times the quantity 180 minus 900 squared plus 0.08 times 300 minus 900 quantity squared plus 0.20 times 540, the quantity 540 minus 900 quantity squared times 363. Have you seen that number before? Again, at the EBIT line, the mu is a no-brainer. The sigma at the EBIT line, what do you notice about it? Come on. It's the same sigma as operating income. That is a major simplification. You don't have to calculate sigma again. It will be the same. Operating sigma will be the same as the sigma above it. Okay? That will always be the case, which means that you've had to calculate only one sigma. And so now we can get the coefficient of variation of EBIT. And what do we get? 360 divided by 900 comes out to be, I get 40.09%. Is that right? 40.09%. Happy days. Now you can tell me what the business risk is. It's for your risk there, that's just pure business risk, is 40.09%. The contribution of operating leverage, in other words, what fixed costs added to that, is 40.09% minus 30.07%. So 10.02% of that volatility in business risk is your fixed expenses. In other words, about a fourth of your business risk is because you have fixed expenses. Let me make sure you understand that. Let me say that again, see if you understand it. About a fourth of the business risk of this firm, about a fourth of it, is because it has fixed costs. That's causing a fourth of all the risk, the business risk of this company. That's an interesting thing to talk about right there, okay? Now I understand a little more about this company, what its overall business risk is, how much of that is its fixed costs. So if they were to say, how do I bring down my business risk? I don't like this volatility. This is a little scary on the volatility end. You would say, well, we really, sales are going to be a bear to try to control volatility on, because that's your customers. Your customers are idiots. But no, they aren't. Your customers are your most important asset of the firm.
They're idiots.
Okay? Now, but if you don't like all that volatility in business risk, you've got you know that a fourth of it is being caused because you've got fixed expenses. And what that would probably mean is that, well, you know, if you want to lay off those fixed expenses, if you're a manufacturing company, you got them. You're married to them. If you're not manufacturing, there might be some places where those fixed expenses are actually, you can get those down. So this helps you shape how you can control volatility. Sales are hard to control volatility, but there is other business risk that you have a little bit more control over. Now, you're going to see some other interesting things. What I want you to do is just copy down on the next block of rows. You see that I'm just saying, get your EBIT, recopy it, just from the lines, from the line row above. We've gotten through business risk. We know what it is. We also know what the operating leverage is of the firm. And so I'm just going to write down these EBITs again. And now I'm going to say, let's talk about interest. And I want for this one, I want you for this one to just simply take down, and let's pretend that there is no interest expense in this company. That way we're going to be able to drive down to net income without worrying too much about, without thinking about financial risk. Let's just drive down to operating income, put zeros in the interest row, and then your EBT will be your EBIT, 180, 180, 180, 180, across, 180, 300, 540, trying to make it easier than it is, 900, and then 1260 on the EBT line, and 1500, and 1620. Okay, now, obviously we've already done this, so we just recopy the mean and the standard deviation from above, 900, 360, $360.80 for sigma, and your coefficient of variation was 40.09%. Okay, now let's take taxes out. And here we're assuming that it's a flat 30% tax you're going to pay on your net, on your EBT. So your tax is 30% of $180 is $54. 30% of $300 is $90. 30% of $540 is $162. 30% of $900 is $270. 30% of $1,260 is $378. 30% of $1,500 is $450. And 30% of $1,620 is $486. So your tax row would be 54, 90, 162, 270, 378, 450, and 486. And now we're going to drop it down to the net income line. 180 minus $54 in taxes is $126. 300 minus $90 in taxes is 210. 540 minus $162 in taxes is $378. 900 less 270. Try that again. 900 minus 270 is $630. 1260 minus the 378 gives us $882. 1500 minus 450 is $1,050. And 1620 minus 486 is $1,134. Okay, now sigma, we'll get mu and sigma. Mu is going to be easy, still a symmetric distribution. So mu is going to be 630. We'll get the sigma, and by this time you might even be saying, why are we doing all this when we know what the coefficient of variation, before you do it, what's the coefficient of variation going to be? The coefficient of variation. The CV is going to be 40.09 because we took out a variable expense. The CV will not change if you're subtracting a percentage from each row element. But let's just do it to make sure that the laws of mathematics are not lying to us. We'll do 0.02 times the quantity 126 minus 630 squared plus 0.08 times, open the parenthesis, 210 minus 630. Close the parenthesis, squared, plus 0.20 times the quantity 378 minus 630, square the result, close the parenthesis. Divide by 6. What do you get for your answer? What is it? 2.5, 2.56? 2.52.56. 2.52.56. I just saw, I actually made a mistake in my calculation somewhere and I knew I was wrong, fortunately. Okay, now if you take 2.5, 2.56 and divide it by 630, what do you get? Well, spank me hard and call me Doris. Yes. Only after dinner and dancing, Sparky. Okay. 40.09%. So you already know that's CV. Okay, now we're going to do this one last time. And I'm just doing that to show you one more time that if you just take out a variable expense, your CV doesn't change. Interestingly, your mu and your sigma will change, but they'll change in such a way that when you divide them, you'll get the same number as before. That's a window on some other things that you can do that are very cool too. One last time, we're going to see financial leverage now. We're going to see what happens, the contribution. Here what I did was I said, okay, let's pretend that there is no interest being paid and we'll see what the CV is. Now let's see the same thing if interest is being paid, see the CV. The difference in the CV will be the contribution of financial leverage. And cranking through it, EBT, you just copy it again, 300, 540, 900, 1260, 1500, and 1620. Now, on this one, what I want you to do for interest, I want you to take $60 in interest out. In other words, you're paying interest. Regardless, you have debt that has $60 of interest that you have to service. And then your EBTs, interest before taxes, with the interest included, would be 120, 240, 480, 840, 1200, 1440, and 1560. Okay? You okay on that? You on board? Okay, now, you should already know what the mean is, mu. Well, you know that, right? Right? Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, some of you are so engrossed in getting the calculation done. You don't need the speed on this. It's 840. Now, to get the sigma, you'll just do, I'm going to take the square root of 2 times, I'll do 2 times all of that, 0.02 times, open parenthesis, 120 minus 840, quantity squared, plus 0.08 times the quantity 240 minus 840. And then I'm going to quantity squared plus 0.2 times the quantity 480 minus 840 quantity squared. And then I'm going to close those parentheses, close them again. Okay, what did you get for sigma? 360.80. Have you seen that 360 someplace before? Yes. Isn't that interesting? That sigma there at that line is going to be the same sigma that you saw at the EBT line. That's sigma. The mean will be different, but the mean is a joke. The sigma, you don't have to calculate it. If you got the sigma right at the EBT line, that will be the same sigma, at the EBIT line, that will be the same sigma clear down there at the bottom. You don't have to calculate it again if you got it right the first time. Or you can calculate it again to make sure that you got it right the first time. It will be the same. Try some way on that worksheet to circle those two and say, they will be the same. So really, when you get down to that EBT line there at the bottom of that worksheet, you don't really have to do any calculations at all except for the CV. Because you know what the mean is. You can just look at that. That's a no-brainer. And if you did the sigma right up, way up above at EBIT, it's going to be the same sigma from above. So all you have to do is calculate the CV as the sigma, as the sigma divided by mu. And if you get that, do that sigma divided by mu, what do you get?
42.9.
Yeah, that's what I got too, was 42.95%. So now you can calculate the contribution of financial leverage. It will be the difference between EBT with interest and EBT without interest. So I'm almost at the end of the story here. I can just say 42.95% minus 42.95% minus 40.09%, and I got for that 2.86%. Is that what you get? 2.86%. Now, there's one last thing here. Suppose that I told you, let me do a quick calculation here. Oops. Suppose that I told you that the taxes, we were just going to do 30%. The taxes were going to be 30% of your earnings before taxes. Can you tell me what the CV is right off the top of your head on that last row of the very last row of the worksheet? What's your net income CV?
42.95%.
Yeah. Why? Because they're just a variable expense, the taxes are. They do not change. They'll change mu, they'll change sigma, but the CV volatility will not change. I'll warn you about something real world in this that you do have to be careful about. I'm not going to hit you with this in this class. There's one place where you wouldn't be able to, well, there's one place even in a relatively simplified scenario, taxes are 30% of EBT, there's one place where you wouldn't be able to say the CV is the same. If in your bad scenarios you hit negative income, you know, like if you were so bad that your fixed expenses and your interest put you into negative income, that would mean that your taxes would zero out, okay? You would have zero taxes. So then there would be a couple of those cells that would have zeros, and that would blow the symmetry of the distribution. So your CV would go into weird stuff. But, and let me repeat that again. Normally, in these kinds of problems, we assume that our sales are robust enough that we can pay our interest and pay our fixed expenses, and there'll be money, there'll be positive net income, positive EBT. And so the last line net income would still follow that same smooth symmetric distribution. Because you would be, your EBT would be positive, so your taxes would be positive, so your bottom line would be positive, all that. However, if you got into a scenario where EBT for some of the low scenarios was a negative number, then you wouldn't be calculating taxes because you'd have negative income. So your taxes would be zero for some of the low cells. then you would no longer have that nice symmetric distribution. The coefficients of variation get really weird there. They don't follow the rules that I've shown you here. So, but like I said, I'm not going to do anything like that on an exam or a quiz or anything like that. Now, I am going to put one of these up for you to do for the weekend, and they're really, once you get the hang of them, they take just a few minutes. Now, here is how it works on my exams. When I give you an exam, and I'm going to talk at length the day the class day before the exam, I just spend the day prepping you. But as a forewarning, and some of you probably already know this because you've talked to students who've had me before, 2 days before an exam, I put up just some financial stuff. I don't tell you what I'm going to ask, but if you've been in the class, you know exactly what I'm going to ask. I'm going to put up financials of a company, and then I'm going to put up a probability distribution on the sales of the company. Give you variable costs as a percentage, fixed costs, interest, all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to say, all right, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do with this, but you probably should be able to figure it out. That gives you 2 days to calculate things like all ratios, to calculate things like business risk, contribution of operating leverage, contribution of financial leverage, total risk. In other words, you will have 2 days to be able to get your calculations in order, and you can bring in your calculations with you to the exam if you choose to do those calculations and you know what those calculations were all about, what I would ask on an exam about this. So this is worth you knowing. If you can get this down real fast, you got a couple of days, it'll take you like 20 minutes to do this sheet, one of these sheets, and I'll put up there'll be a blank version of this that you can print out some for yourself to do different problems with. But for the weekend, you're going to have one of these just to do and to turn in. But there you are. As you can see, these sheets look daunting at first blush, but they're actually fairly easy. The coefficient of variation, CV, is actually used. And it is still to this day. Not despite the fact that we have all of these incredibly powerful models and mathematical engineers and software and quant geniuses, this is still used. CVs are a very popular measure of volatility, and volatility is a measure of risk. However, the most important measure of risk from the market standpoint is the interest rate. And when I say the interest rate, as I had said in an early lecture, there are many interest rates you can talk about. There are the discount rate, the federal funds rate, the rate on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, the treasury bill rate. There are a lot of different interest rates, and they are largely driven. Of course, the underlying substrate of any risk, of any interest rate is the risk-free rate, which is the real rate. Oh, I'm using R's. We're supposed to use K's. This is the 21st century. The real interest rate plus an expected inflation premium. This thing right here is called the risk-free rate, and it is proxied by a short-term treasury bill, which is risk-free, notwithstanding Standard & Poor's, which still actually right now is claiming that a bond that it rated that is backed by junk CDOs has a higher rating than the U.S. government's stuff. That tells you how reliable Standard & Poor's is anymore and who is scratching their backs and greasing their pockets. However, let's get down to the business. All interest rates begin with this animal right here. It is the rock base upon which every interest rate will form. And on top of that, you will have your risk premium, your default premium, your maturity premium, your liquidity premium. In practical terms, to get an interest rate, we use the capital asset pricing model, which says that the discount rate for a security, the interest rate, would be calculated as the risk-free rate plus the beta of that security times the expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. We call that animal right there the market premium. That is the beta, which measures the risk of this security relative, measures the non-diversifiable risk of this security relative to the market portfolio. Okay? It measures the non-diversifiable risk of this security relative to the market portfolio. It does not tell you the overall risk of this security. You can have a security, for example, with a beta of, let's say, 0.25. It would have 25% of the risk of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. This, however, could be a phenomenally high-risk stock. You could buy this stock on its own, and you could take an ass bath. That's a technical term, by the way. This thing could have a whipsaw like you wouldn't believe. But it has a beta of only 0.25. That's right. That's its non-diversifiable risk. You put that into a broad-based portfolio, and then it will behave itself. You put it on its own, and it could be just a crazy, I'm looking at you. You put you with your parents and your relatives, your Uncle Ned and your Aunt Betty, and all of the other people in the family, and you all go to church where there's a crowd. You are a fine, upstanding Presbyterian stud. You put you alone in your room with a computer, the internet, and the web address of a porn site like grannytranny.com, you, sir, become a rogue. Wait, Granny Tranny? Never mind. Don't go there. Bad site. Where the hell did that come from? 40 years from now, you'll see Lady Gaga there. And Ann Coulter. Where the hell was I? You understand that these betas, they're talking to you about being a prudent investor. If you want to buy a single stock and roll the dice, actually, you would do better in Vegas. You wouldn't make any more money, but at least you get a great meal. You'd meet some girls who would pretend to like you, men, and you meet some guys who look like they belong in movies, ladies, and you would actually be able to take pictures and have a story. With a stock, you go out there on your own and you roll the dice like that. All you have is an ugly story that says, I was stupid, that you're not going to tell anyone again the rest of your life. That's one of the dangers you have with these financial networks and these financial gurus. Well, I've invested in this stock, just one stock, and I made myself a millionaire overnight. You hear that person, the other 10 million who did the same thing, who got their clocks cleaned, they're too ashamed to tell you that they did it and got their clocks cleaned. So understand what beta measures, what it means. I will ask you on an exam. I have you write essay answers. One sentence is what I ask for. Don't ever try to give me more than one sentence for an essay answer. I have a bullshit stamp. I re-ink it. I literally use it. It's a collector's item on eBay. Getting that, don't try for the collector's status. You simply say, if I ask you, what beta measures. Don't go into some long-winded explanation. If I say purchasing a stock with a beta of 0.5 means you are bearing half the risk of the market portfolio, you say no. You are bearing half of the non-diversifiable risk. But there could be considerable other risk in this security. Now, we get this discount rate, this K. And why does that matter to us? It matters because cash flows later are worth less than cash flow now. There you are. It happened one day. You found out that I am your father. Together we can rule the galaxy. Take $100 now or take $100 in 5 years. Join me or die. No, I will never join you. You understand that which are you going to take? The $100 now? Take my hand. Or the $100 in 5 years when the rebel force wins? You'll take it now. Good choice, my son. Let's go out and fight some Ewoks for fun. You see, money now is worth more than money later. How do we measure that? How do we measure this discount phenomenon that happens with money in the future? We use a discount rate. We divide by a risk factor that represents how much risk there is in waiting. There are actually more than just risk. There's just the fact that if I have $100 now versus $100 in 5 years, I'm actually making the choice between $100 worth of cheeseburgers now or $100 worth of cheeseburgers in the future, 5 years from now. So there's actually just the opportunity cost of foregone consumption. I have to be rewarded for that. I'm not going to just say, oh, I'll just give up consumption for nothing. You're rewarded for that. You're also going to be rewarded for the possibility that cash flow will not be what you wanted it to be. 5 years from now, that $100, you don't know that the rebels are going to win. You have no idea of that. You see, so you are taking a risk by waiting 5 years. Not only are you giving up consumption that you could have had now, you're also bearing risk of the future. That's where that discount rate comes in. So if I want to know the present value of a future cash flow, then I am going to have to take its future value and I'm going to have to divide it by 1 plus the discount rate that would be applicable to the nth power. Future value at n. This is called the present value of a lump sum. N years out at a discount rate of k per year. Conversely, I can find out if I just multiply both sides, the present value times 1 plus k to the nth power will tell me the future value n years out of a cash flow. Lump sum. This would be the present value. This would be the future value. Let me do one for you. You invest $250 in an account that pays 6.2% compounded semi-annually. How much will you have after 5 years? You got to watch it. When I give you an interest rate, and this is true in all of finance and in business in general, unless there is some very clear statement to the contrary, we are referring to annual interest rates. So when I said 6.2%, that's an annual. Watch yourself. First things first, do I use the present value formula? Is it the present value of the money I don't know, or is it the future value I don't know here? That's right. I know how much I have now. I said you invest $250. That's now money. So I'm going to say $250 would be my present value. My N, what do I mean by semi-annual compounding? How many times a year does it happen? Two. What if I said quarterly? Monthly? Weekly. You know what frosts my boxers? I put weekly on an exam last year, and someone said, how many weeks are in a year? No, seriously, noobs, don't ask me that. 52 weeks in a year. If you don't know that, you are a noob. You came from some planet that was like, you know, spinning slowly around its Death Star. I don't know. Okay, here's one for you. Daily. Knock it off. It's actually 365 one place and it's 360 another place. Uh-huh. Yes. In the old style. Now, these days they just say use 365 everywhere. Actually, old style, you use 365 to find the number of periods, but you use 360 to divide the annualized interest rate. And the logic, the rule was 360 bankers' days in a year. There was actually another reason for it, too. Back before there were calculators, you had to do things with slide rules or in your head or with these ginormous tables. Interestingly enough, there is an old, old rule of thumb for 360 that makes dividing by it really simple and fast. That was the real reason. I'll explain that one later. I'll show you that one next week. But here, N, I have 5 years, but I have 2 periods per year. So the number N for the formula is 10. Watch that. And the interest rate is not 6.2%, it's 6.2 twice a year. So per period, it's only 3.1%. Don't forget to turn it into a decimal when you're doing these calculations, for God's sake. Okay, so through the grinder, we're going to take this meatloaf. The future value 5 years out is going to be $250 times 1 plus 0.031. to the 10th power. To the 10th power.
So what does that come up with? 250 times, open parenthesis, 1.031, close parenthesis, I don't even need the parenthesis, to the 10th power. I get 300, my ass. Is that right? $339.26? That's a rip. I'll just use this $250 now and buy myself Denny's Grand Slams.
And now, one last practical problem. A variation
on a practical problem.
You don't want to live forever, do you? No. All right, good.
but you would like to reach the average life expectancy of a North American female. Good. Now, you would like at the age of, let's say, 70, wouldn't it be nice if you could retire with $1 million? You could buy yourself a nice, one of those assisted living places. With $1 million, you could get your own shuffleboard, and you could hire some cougar bait for, you know, just a boy toy. Or not. Not. Okay. This is actually the beginning of what we would call financial planning. I want to retire with a certain amount of money, and I, although I wasn't a financial planner, I did it for people, and a lot of my former students have gotten into financial planning. How much do you want? We actually would tell people, if you want an amount of money, if you're like 22 now, it will knock you dead how much you probably would want to have if you were planning to retire at like 72. Right now, my recommendation is that you would want to have about $4.5 million. That would keep you from eating cat food. If you wanted to be really comfortable, and I ask people, you want to just be able to just get by? Do you want to be comfortable, or do you want to really have it good? Comfortable, you're talking probably around $9 to $12 million. And if you want to really have it good and, you know, not have to share a room with someone who's got real big problems in the hospital, including psychiatric problems, then you probably are talking around $20 million just to have a really good retirement. And planning to live probably about 30 to 40 years. Your life expectancy is going to probably be around 100 years. Well, some of you, not nearly that long. No way. But let's put it at $1 million. You're going to live. Cat food is good. And, you know, that's... I recommend Friskies myself. But no, seriously, my cats don't like it, but they're real finicky. Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's say that you're 22, and let's make it simple. You want to retire at 72, and you would like $1 million, which means that I want to know how much you would have to put in as a lump sum now. Would you have to put in you have to invest now at, let's say, 5.8% compounded monthly and we'll do it as a lump sum. You put it in now and just leave it alone to have $1 million in 50 years. Now, you can see that we have to calculate a present value here. We need to know how much now to create a future value. So we use the formula above, and I'm going to push it in all at once here. So the present value I need will be my future value, $1 million, divided by, and I'm going to do it all in one blow here, 1 plus 0.058 divided by 12 to the 12 times 50. That would be 600 periods of compounding. Okay, just get it down. You see it? Actually, I probably should write that a little larger there. Let me write that a little larger for the audience, clear at the back. $1 million over 1 plus 0.058 divided by 12. I'm going to break up the annual 12 times, 12 compoundings per year, and then I'm going to raise that to the 12 times 50. Because there are 50 years, 12 compoundings a year, 12 times 50 or 600 compoundings will happen. Okay, you with me?
By the and you can also do this just 1 million times this if you make that a negative exponent. But just, it's your call how you want to do that. But if I hammer that thing down, $1 million times, or divided by, 1 plus 0.058, 12. And I'm going to say minus. How much do you get? Yeah, that's what I get. $55,408.95. That's actually surprisingly not a large amount of money, but you can't touch it. And that's actually, in this interest rate environment, that's a pretty high interest rate. But nevertheless, you will be able to afford cat food and something besides a see, this is financial planning. Real problems for real people. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.